The Off the Ball Podcast Network. OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
Brian Driscoll was on. Alan Quinlan on the way, by the way, one of the greatest Six Nations players of all time, in my view, on the way very shortly to talk us through all things Ireland-Wales this weekend. Brian O'Driscoll was on last night's show. He warned that Ireland's box-kicking tactics are not fooling anyone, offering the same returns that they did 2 years ago.
Should Murray be at a stage in his career that he's able to realise mid-game that actually Scotland have this figured out, that they're getting men back quickly, and try something different?
Yeah, well, the problem is, you know, if you attack, or if you set up to kick, well, you've no alternative option. So, you know, where you see an offer, you see the caterpillar, and then one player will stand directly, you know, or a foot behind the ball because that player can't be in front, and then the scrum half steps in behind them to kick it. But, like, what defence is going to feel threatened by that setup when they know it's coming? You have to show something as an alternative option to interest the defenders and make them look at things differently and make them stay hard in the forward line rather than immediately turn their backs and filter back into the backfield. So, I think there are, I can understand the frustrations of the public because the box kick, we're not getting as much success out of it as well. That's the other thing. If you get 60% of your box kicks back and you get possession from it, you know, people will get over their disappointment of kicking the ball away. Whereas now, I don't know what the stats are looking like, but it feels as though we're kind of getting 25, 30% of them back at a push. And that's not a good enough return for kicking possession away.
That full piece up on offtheball.com. Alan Quinlan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Ed.
How are you getting on?
Grand, thanks, yeah.
We had a bit of interaction earlier on because we were setting forward to the fact that Jeremy Guscott and Jonathan Davies are going to be in the studio a little bit later on, and I described them as two of the greatest Six Nations players of all time. And Owen pulled me up to say, that why was I not including you in that mix?
You were dead right. They're two legends of the Six Nations. Jonathan Davies is looking a little bit worse for
is
wear
he?
Out there. Yeah, I think he enjoyed
a little
bit of a little bit of hospitality last night.
Pulling back the curtain.
You can check that out with him when he comes in. But they have plenty of historic stories, I'm sure, to tell you in a little while.
Yeah, we'll have a bit of a chat about that. I wonder, before we get into the meat and drink of Ireland-Wales this weekend, if we're going to be sitting here again in 5 weeks' time, Quinny, debating as to when this is all going to come right for Ireland. Like, it feels like we've been having this conversation about the Irish funk for longer than we need to have, and there isn't any great indicators that it's going to end anytime soon.
Yeah, it does feel like that because obviously this time last year, you know, we were on a high, such a high after all that happened in 2018, and started off poorly against England, and it kind of, they got back on track against Scotland and they stuttered their way through, you know, poor performance in Italy. France was a bit better again. There was three bad games and two good ones, and even though it was three wins out of the five, the whole year was just a bit of a struggle, really, and a number of factors. Teams figuring Ireland out, Ireland dropping maybe the intensity and the accuracy and the pace that they were doing things as well, and maybe a bit of a dip in form from a number of players added to that. So there's pressure and there's a bit of baggage, and that's kind of a little bit of psychological baggage. But if you're the optimist and you want to believe that they're going to get back on track, we've started Six Nations slow before, and the Grand Slam in 2018, France was far from a perfect result. The Johnny Sexton drop goal at the end, so they started a little bit slow. So I'm hopeful that you know, they can change a couple of gears tomorrow and play a lot better. If it doesn't happen, does that affect the players out in the field, and do they, that bit of confidence kind of drain out of them as well, and does the scars that they've had to endure in 2019, do they come back to kind of affect that confidence?
And so, they quietly start to question the new coaching setup, obviously.
Well, that's going to take time. There's absolutely no doubt about that. It's going to take time.
Do players give it time, right? So, like, we obviously look in and we can't affect things.
Well, they've got to believe what the coaches tell them. You know, in international rugby, you've very little time to iron every detail out. You hope you can get better on the run and that you can get positive results. So that's what they did. They got the win last week.
But in your experience, when a new coaching ticket comes in and things aren't, I don't know if you'd ever been through that, where things haven't been exactly as they might have been over the first few games. Obviously, in the press, they're going to say, listen, you've got to give this time. They're going to say all the right things. But privately, at what point are they saying, I'm really not sure about this?
It takes a bit of time. The players have got to give it time as well. It's not as if you're kind of ripping up a script and doing everything totally different. The fundamentals have to be right. The foundation, the set piece, the scrum line-out, which the scrum wasn't great last week. There was a few penalties there against Ireland. Line-out was decent, but the maul wasn't great. And I think there was one line-out that Ireland won, the 22, Peter O'Mahony. Great throw to the tail, 68 minute or something. And, you know, they're trying to get a maul rumbling. Build pressure, which the team was kind of renowned for when they were winning. And Hamish Watson slips in into the middle of the maul and takes the ball. And those kind of moments, that hurts you as a pack of forwards, because they're crucial moments that you've got to try and deliver a platform for your backline to attack and at least come away with some sort of a score. So we spoke earlier during the week about Scotland's emotion being through the roof. That was always going to happen. And Ireland were just a little bit passive defensively, not getting off the line, not winning the dominant tackles. So there's lots of things that you can... It's a bit of an attitude thing and it's a mental thing that you need. Ireland need to make sure that all those things are better tomorrow, because Wales dominated them last year in those collision areas, in the pressure game.
Come back to that in a second. The flatness of it. Sexton was talking about in the papers this morning about before the Scotland game, they were out doing the warm-up and on the way in, he was like, lads, we need to lift this, that it feels all a bit flat. Like, where's that coming from?
That can happen. It might be a confidence thing. It might be people just keeping their head down a little bit, hoping that things go well, rather than really kind of... I suppose driving it themselves to step, and it's understandable when any team loses in any sport, Adrian. It's hard to, you know, they're having to deal with the questions with the public since they've come back from the World Cup, and that does play in your mind a little bit.
Do you think there's a World Cup hangover? Then is that the
I wouldn't say hangover, but I think one big performance can get you back on track a little bit. We thought that was. The Scotland game in Yokohama in the first game would really ignite the team, and you know they went backwards, I suppose, with the loss to Japan a week later. So it depends. There's pressure and there's expectation there. I'd rather as a player have that pressure and expectation than not, but I think they don't need any cause for tomorrow. Obviously, it's a big Six Nations game and you always want to win them, but Wales ruffled them up last year, so there has to be a real motivation and an aggression brought to tomorrow's game, because Wales start well, they're a confident side and they get in the front foot, they play a good brand of rugby, they throw the ball around and they can hurt you with pace in their game. So Ireland have got to be really aggressive early on and start the game well tomorrow. I think that's really imperative, that not necessarily on the scoreboard, but just their body language, their energy, their enthusiasm and just an intent out of them. They've got to let Wales know that it's going to be very, very difficult in Dublin tomorrow.
Were you surprised to see that Ireland are 4-point favourites going into this game?
A little bit, yeah. Particularly when you look at the performances last week. There's probably two ways of looking at this, Owen. How good were Wales last week and, you know, how bad were Ireland, if you want to use that term. Ireland struggled a little bit. And maybe that's been disrespectful to Scotland, because Scotland, you know, if Scotland go and beat England tomorrow, which... England are on a bit of a backlash scenario themselves after losing in France. If Scotland were to win, we'll all start saying, geez, that was a really good Scottish team, and Gregor Townsend now has found, you know, better players and he's making 10 changes. So we'll know more tomorrow even how good or bad it was. Maybe it was a great win. Maybe we look back and say it's a great win. If Ireland lose tomorrow, well, the pressure is going to heap on the team and the group, and there'll be a massive call for way more change in personnel. But
because that's because of what happened last year as well, that especially if Wales win healthily in Dublin tomorrow, it's back-to-back Six Nations where they've beaten Ireland well, you're kind of looking at a certain coterie of players and you're thinking to yourself, are they capable of getting us back to a championship competing level again? Because we probably think that we're a mile off England on last year's evidence, maybe not, but certainly if it's back-to-back batterings from Wales, you definitely have to be asking those questions.
Yeah, you would, and it's bad news for the players, because there's a number of them they could be chopped after that, and that's just a reality. If we lose tomorrow, well, you're kind of you're in a situation then where a Grand Slam is gone, a Triple Crown is gone, maybe a Championship is gone as well, and you're going to Twickenham to play England, and if we were to lose, it's hypothetical now, but it could happen. Wales are a very good side, and that's going to heap more pressure on. But I just think that the motivation, the desire individually and collectively has to be massive tomorrow, because sometimes that can drive you on, the what-ifs, and that has to be a factor tomorrow. I think, you know, Wales are a side who won't fear coming to Dublin. They're not... they're not fearing this game tomorrow. I think they'll be very conscious and aware that Ireland have the massive potential to get better, and I believe they will get better. And but I'm still, when you look at the Welsh side, I think Tipperick, Wainwright, Faletau, Alan Wynne-Jones, Jake Ball, that five can do a lot of damage against Ireland tomorrow, and that's an area that we have to, James Ryan, Henderson, our back row, they really need to have positive moments tomorrow and set the tone.
Because Wales can do a number on you. And like we were talking about the style almost of, I suppose, Ireland's development under Andy Farrell. Pivac likes to play this very quick pass, gets the ball away from the crash side as quick as they can, this sort of two-pass rule almost. I think that they had at Scarlett's is looking like it's a thing he's going to do with Wales as well. Like, they can really hurt you. And that, I know you're writing tomorrow about the kind of dominant tackle area from an Irish point of view, but it's very evident that that's going to be potentially the winning and losing of this game tomorrow.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be crucial. For any team, it's... I remember doing the game last year, England-France in Twickenham, and England won, I think, 44-8 against France. Totally dominated them, obliterated them off the field. They kicked the ball 44 times in the game. Nobody leaving the stadium that day was complaining about the kicking or the style. It was just relentless pressure, and it was just forcing scores, forcing France to make opposition mistakes in the backfield, to run it back, to be turned over. You know, it wasn't that they played this continuous expanse of wonderful rugby. So to stop Wales, you know, if you allow Wales play, of course they can really hurt you. And at the World Cup, they were brilliant in the first half, their tempo, their pace, their clean out. And if they get on that front foot and the ball is really quick, they move the ball very well, and it's hard to defend for anybody. So for Ireland, I think it's particularly around that dominant tackle area, and you know, we've lost the vast majority of the dominant tackle counts since that game in Grand Slam win in Twickenham two years ago, which you look at last week, Scotland had 27 dominant tackles to our 18, and that just, it kind of, sometimes stats can lie. Because Ireland played Italy the Grand Slam year, and they won 56-19. Italy had 24 dominant tackles, Ireland had 16. Italy didn't have the ball, you know what I mean? So that kind of, sometimes a scoreline when it's massive, it can skew the stats. But in the closer games, the games that you look at and you go off the field and you say Ireland were second best in those collision areas. I know Andy Farrell was asked about it this week. The dog is there. We spoke about it last week as well. They have the capability of being a very physical group of players. But for me, it's up front as a unit. They've got to just hunt a bit better and be on the front foot and smash people a little bit more around the sides of breakdowns, because if you're soaking tackles, it's hard to slow down that breakdown.
Yeah, and a lot of players under pressure, obviously, to deliver in this game tomorrow. I think a strong performance of Conor Murray would suddenly take a lot of those question marks away as well. Not much time left. What, 4-point spread, you were saying?
Yeah.
What's going to happen?
I don't know. I'm quite nervous about this, and I look at the Welsh side, and, it's hard to call it because that performance last week, we're not really sure. A part of me thinks it's a little bit unfair that it was a good win. It was incredibly intense. And another part of me thinks it should be better. So Ireland just need to be better tomorrow, and if they are, I think they'll win the game. But I'm quite fearful. So Wales are a very good side, and unless we really kind of take them on up front and are aggressive with them, we lose the game.
You spoke about England and their backlash, and that's going to come this weekend. Do Ireland have that ability to create an unbelievable backlash where you're like, right, if everybody's on song, they will crush everybody in front of them? Because it seems that there was a couple of opportunities last year for a backlash. You know, go and beat Wales, which they didn't take advantage of, or go and put in a good performance against the All Blacks after a tough start to the World Cup.
They have that capability, but it's one thing being capable of doing it and doing it. I think there was so much going on probably in their heads last year, and They just couldn't get out of that rut that they were in. That was, you know, going back to type, slowing the game down when the pressure came on. You can slow the game down. Like, if Ireland are 10 points up tomorrow and they're being really good with their kicking, their box kicking, territorial game, that's fine. The crowd will love it. But if you're 10 points down and you're kicking the ball and you're slowing things down, that's where the frustration comes in. Listen, the reality, Adrian said it, if I'm Peter O'Mahony, and even though Stander was brilliant last week, Van der Fleer, any of the forwards, they're all vulnerable to, Conor Murray's vulnerable, they're all vulnerable to change. If Ireland lose tomorrow, these guys might get dropped and could very well be dropped off the team. So if that doesn't motivate them, nothing will, aside from the obvious of winning the game. So I think that will ignite them a little bit. And even if we play well, it doesn't mean we'll win the game. You know,
absolutely.
Wales are a decent side, you know, so it'll be a very tight one, I think.
Yeah, all right, look forward to it. Quinny, thanks for coming in. As always, on this Friday morning, it's 8:09. We've lots to come. We've Jonathan Davies and Jeremy Guscott going to join us in studio a little bit later on. David Brady's in studio as well before 9:00 to talk all things Football League. We're going to be here, hear his thoughts on Mayo as well and plenty more besides. We've Jonathan Sexton's thoughts coming up first. Take a quick ad break.
OTB AM on OTB Sports Radio, Ireland's first and only sports radio station.
The Six Nations Championship has arrived, and there's only one place to hear the biggest names in rugby every day of the week.
This is OTB Sports Radio.
Brian O'Driscoll.
The evolution of Ireland probably wasn't to the same degree over that period of time.
Ronan O'Gara.
What is a team player is backing your game plan, but also backing your instinct.
Keith Wood.
We just turf that bloody thing in the bin and never speak of it again.
Alan Quinlan.
I'm kind of sick of listening to him saying, oh, it's because they're the biggest playing pool in the world.
The best analysis from the legends of the game.
OTB Sports Radio.
We'll also have reporters at every match across the men's and women's Six Nations, post-match reaction, and Owen Sheehan will be meeting the people.
I fully believe that the Irish team lost because they want to go on the sesh in Japan. Sesh! All the way!
That's the Six Nations Championship on OTB Sports Radio.
American Football 101. On Off the Ball.
With the Aer Lingus College Football Classic.
The Kansas City Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes was crowned most valuable player at Sunday night's Super Bowl. The New England Patriots' Tom Brady holds the Super Bowl record. Brady was crowned MVP on four separate occasions.
American Football 101. On Off the Ball.
With the Aer Lingus College Football Classic.
OTB AM.
Yeah, of course, we were going for a championship, you know what I mean? Now that they were going for a Grand Slam, we were going for a championship, and we got well beaten out the gate. Very disappointing day, and one that, you know, any time you lose for Ireland, it never leaves you. You know, you think about it a lot, and that was one of those days.
Just as it seems to be a look at a game as well, there's a lot of talk about maybe players being too static when receiving the ball within the Irish game plan. Is that something that's being worked on? Do you think you can get better?
No, I disagree. Yeah, obviously, when you get slow ball off, you know, bad set piece, you know, you can't run onto the ball into a brick wall. So we did some really good things at times when we were moving onto the ball, and we hope to get more front football this week. We might not, and we won't try and force things if we're not, because we know what we're meant to do against slow ball when you got, you know, full defence against you. You know, it's not as easy as that.
Jonathan Sexton in conversation with the media during the week, head of Ireland-Wales obviously this weekend, and we'll have plenty more conversation of that to come with Jeremy Guscott and Jonathan Davies for your viewing pleasure in studio. Last night saw the return of Richard Cooper's critically acclaimed Richard's Rugger Thing. Take a look.
You're very welcome along to Off The Ball AM and our relentless rugby coverage in association with, the rest. Of course, a bit of a dreary start against Scotland last week. We didn't manage to win just about. But we've got a different kettle of fish. Wales are Wales, as we know. So that's what we're facing on Saturday. But I suppose the bigger question since the World Cup is, you know, state of Ireland's mindset. What is Ireland's mindset? Should we be concerned about Ireland's mindset? Is Andy Farrell the kind of coach that's going to be, you know, thinking that there's a problem? with the Irishman set. What's going on there?
Yeah, well, I suppose that's the point. Do we need to change anything at all? I mean, maybe everything's fine the way it is.
Well, we need to change something because, you know, particularly the way Ireland are playing, I mean, they've been, you know, pretty dreary, pretty dire.
Well, apart from winning the Grand Slam, obviously, that wasn't dire.
No, that wasn't dire. But apart from the times when Ireland were good, they were bad.
Well, they definitely played better the year they won the Grand Slam than they did when they didn't.
Go figure.
But I suppose the point I'm trying to make is, insofar a point is ever being made on this show, is, you know, Andy Farrell now has a clean slate, a kind of a, you know, like a new dawn. So, you know, in a way, that's sort of an advantage, you know, to have that sort of blank canvas.
Really? Is it a new dawn? Really? Is it a new dawn?
Potentially.
Yeah, potentially. It could be dreadful. Could be awful. Could be, like, the worst period in Irish rugby in decades. But conversely, we still do have very good Irish rugby players, so I suppose it could render what I just said meaningless.
You mean like everything you say, Ger?
Yeah, OK, well, ahead of Ireland's huge game with Wales on Saturday, delighted to be joined on the line by Scott Grinnell. Scott, this is a pretty difficult one to call, right? I mean, last year, Wales absolutely hammered Ireland, sort of like the rugby equivalent of a penalty shootout, except it wasn't really like that because Ireland didn't really get that many penalties. But you got my drift. Difficult one to call for you?
I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about. And I tell you something, these are the games, aren't they, that if you're not up for it, it's games like this, you'll never be up for anything. It's a fabulous occasion. F***ing wonderful atmosphere. Who's going to want it more? That's what it boils down to. Down to more than anything else. If you want it, it's there for you. That's what the Six Nations is all about. Because it's f***ing there. It's a f***ing trophy it's all about. The Six Nations trophy. It's about seeing it, grabbing it, and taking it. It's about f***ing taking the opportunities at this level. Because if you don't f***ing do it, you won't f***ing do it.
And if you had to call a winner right now,
to be honest, it's too tight to call. I really think this could go either way, and I'd say it probably will.
So you're saying they're both going to win? Yeah. Interesting, yes. Very interesting insight into the cryptic mind of Scott Quinnell there. OK, well, so much for Ireland against Wales. Also another big game on Saturday, which is, of course, the Calcutta Cup match. Really? Is that a thing? Yikes. Yes, England play Scotland. And Will Greenwood is on the line now to talk about that one from his opium den in Blackburn. Will, how do you see this one going? It's another difficult one to call, right?
Well, calls for Eddie Jones to be sacked after one bad performance against the rampant French. Absolutely ridiculous. Wrong. No thanks. Next. One bad day at the office. And hey, what a performance by Les Bleus. Hats off. French flair in abundance. Back to the old days. Pace, power, grit, wit. Absolutely never say die. We move on. Scotland feeling pretty aggrieved after Saturday. The Irish there for the taking. Not to be. What a battle. Hot and steamy. Celtic mist. Hog disaster. He scores, it's game over. Scotland dominated the scrum that contained Healy and Furlong, two British Lions.
Yeah, two British and Irish Lions, actually.
We move on. They will be gunning for England. Absolutely no holds barred. Stuck into the old enemy. Let them know you're there. Typical Celts, fire in the belly, passion, belief, hairy, farty, flower of Scotland, up your kilt, Jimmy, William Wallace, eye of the tiger, arse of a rhinoceros, but ultimately just a little bit shit. Prediction, England.
OK, well, with the election coming up, Shane Ross, the Minister for Sport, is on the line. Shane, are you going to be at the match on Saturday?
Oh, yes, I wouldn't miss it for all the tea in China, which is fine, by the way, but don't share the cup. No, seriously, I'm a big, big rugger fan. It's in the blood. I played quite a bit in boarding school.
Oh, really? What position?
Well, I played a loose head hooker on and off the field, but I love the Six Nations rugger in particular, the history, the traditions, and I'm looking forward to a damn good spectacle this weekend. I just hope Era can keep the tempo up for the full 90 minutes.
OK, we're going to wrap it up there after the break. I'm going to be joined by somebody else who's going to talk about something else that I have to pretend to be interested in. See you then. OK, thank you.
Richard's rugger thing.
On Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team.
Team of Us. Everyone in.
Yeah, it's all fun and games until he actually starts doing you as the...
Yeah, I'm safe. I'm way down the food chain.
He's very good. Will Greenwood is... Like, his version of you is excellent and Jared the same. Slightly exaggerated version. But the Will Greenwood...
I love the Will Greenwood.
Actually could be him.
Yeah.
Is the thing.
Just, that's the thing with Will Greenwood. He gets excited and just throws out random words. Yeah.
It's nailed on.
Like, he's unbelievable.
9:15 on this Friday morning, we have Jeremy Guscott and Jonathan Davis standing by to come into studio a little bit later on. David Brady as well to look ahead to the weekend's football. But before that, the very latest episode of our new show, The Classic Game Club, is going live today. Neil Tracy, Joe Malloy joined on to watch back and discuss the Grand Slam game of 2009, Ireland versus Wales.
What have you got, Neil? You've got... Give us a bullet point list of all the things that jarred with you.
Right, so I'll do kicking first, because you'd mentioned that as well. We spoke about how it was just four boxes.
It's going to be like the Golden Carrick speech.
It wasn't just... But
are these from your personal stats you took at the time?
No. Okay, I went back on it yesterday. The actual quantity of kicking itself and the type of it. First of all, like, less box kicking. There was just so much aimless... Boot it up to the 22,
yeah,
and we'll chase it up again. The quantity of it, though, was crazy. Ireland kicked 40 times in that game.
How does that compare to modern standards?
I like that. I like that you asked that, Joe. But Ireland kicked 40 times in that game. Wales kicked 26.
Context is everything.
So last season, when they met in the Six Nations, Ireland kicked 18 times.
18?
18.
There you go.
Isn't that interesting?
Ireland's average, I would say, from what I can remember in the last year or so, I'd say they're kicking 20 to 25 times a game. In that Six Nations in 2009, Ireland kicked 40 times against Wales, 37 against Scotland, 42 against England, 40 against France, and just 17 against Italy, because they didn't really need to.
That's
so they average 35 kicks a game during that Six Nations, as opposed to 21, I think, in the last Six Nations.
If you said to people now, what's one of the ills of the Irish game, they would say, oh, just kicking the ball all the time.
It's just different types of it.
Mm. You are the star of Classic Game Club, I think it's fair to say. Nobody's gone to this level of depth after watching a game back. Keep these coming.
And if you add it up between the two teams in each game, of Ireland's games in the Six Nations, there were more than 60 kicks in all but one of them. There were 79 kicks between Ireland and England. It was like 42 to like 37 or something.
To be fair,
Croke Park in fairness. Yeah.
I did on YouTube hit the old double tap 15 seconds a good bit when it was kick tennis.
Yeah, there was so much of that.
Good function, actually. I didn't know about that.
And then
2 a.m. you got to do everything.
Yeah. Just the long clearing kicks. So then another one, the number of high tackles. Tackles that start out normal enough. Do you know those ones that would get penalised now where you just slide up and you end up around the neck? Dozens of them. Absolutely dozens of them.
That's right. That didn't jump out at me.
Just kind of sliding up and ending up, a forearm kind of going up around the neck and the neck and the face. The letting them know you're there kind of ones. And then the tackle as well. This kind of comes back to the, is there a section on like the legacy or something like that?
Yeah, but let's get into the tackle thing here then.
Hemmed him in with the rules.
we're moving over to sliding doors here a little bit.
So, do you know what I mean now? When there's a tackle, they get to the ground, the tackler has to do the like
release.
Hands in the air, the clear release.
Yeah.
You didn't really have to do that at the time.
I found it very stodgy around the breakdown.
Yeah.
I didn't enjoy that.
That's because you could just go to ground with him and get back to your feet without actually really releasing him.
That's been a good change.
Yeah.
I actually, like, rugby has improved since then.
Because what it did was, when, like, they didn't necessarily change the law, they just decided they were going to interpret it much more differently because it was a complete mess. And Ireland were so good at making it a mess. You'd have someone like David Wallace who'd tackle someone, bring him to ground, and he would just stay bound on the ball and get back up onto his feet. And it meant that for the referee coming in, when they, you know, changed the way they were looking at it, it meant that, first of all, the referee had to look and see, has the tackler released, then has the ball carrier released.
And do you agree it's better now? It's a better
spectacle? Definitely.
Yeah, so,
definitely.
But that's because of this rule. Like, the reason why there's more kicking is because of that very rule. Like, people didn't want to get caught in the breakdown.
Yeah.
Like, the defender had the advantage there, whereas that rule took it away from the defender quite substantially.
Yeah, so basically in 2010, the new interpretation meant tacklers had to show the daylight, basically, hands up in the air, and then you can go back in. So the tackler became the first thing the referee was looking at it. Ireland actually challenged the interpretation of that in the summer of 2010.
Yeah, Les Kiss.
No, not even the choke tackle.
Oh.
Yeah, they like the actual, about the ruck itself. They requested a ruling relating to the law from...
Oh, like they legally challenged
World Rugby. Not legally challenged. Basically, countries every now and again, they could ask for a clarification on a law.
Right.
But they would have to do it publicly. This is all up on World Rugby's website. You can see them like submitting their reasons for why they think X, Y, and Z. So the clarification in the end from World Rugby was players who were attached to the player who is tackled and who remains on their feet must release the player and the ball and then play the ball in accordance with law.
You lead a rock and roll life, my friend.
I know, yeah. I brought this chat down a dark, dark path.
I didn't know about that, though. I didn't know that it was that all those changes came so soon after, because it does, if you're looking at something very, very closely, in and on a breakdown, it looks very, very different. But yeah. I didn't realise it happened so quickly afterwards.
Maybe, I think it was like the year or so before they had those experimental law variations, and then they brought in a few of them permanently and decided they weren't actually going to tweak with any laws until after the next World Cup. But what they were going to do with some things was just kind of clarify the interpretation of what exactly is happening. Mm. So there were a few of those where countries would kind of like challenge a rule or challenge a law and get it clarified and stuff like that. And that was one. And that's the way we have it now, which is far, far better.
All right, more of that. 2009 reminiscing with Owen, Neil and Joe. You can head along to offtheball.com and it's up a little bit later today. The latest episode of the Classic Game Club will be live a little bit later on. More rugby to come. A couple of very special guests en route. They're with us in just a minute. OTB
AM. Good. Definitely there was things that we could have moved it at times. The time with me and Jordan in the 22, I don't think that was the wrong decision. It was just poor execution. I could have held down Hugh Jones and then Jordan would have gone up the touchline with the kick option, with the run option back inside if I did my job right. We just want ball, I suppose. We want to get good ball. We want to get counter-attacking ball. Jordan's obviously likes running the ball, so I need to give him options. Get the ball in Jacob's hands, that Jacob does damage, and that's what we want as a back three. But it's not always going to be perfect, and we need to understand there's other areas of the game. There's the kicking game, there's the kick chase, there's just a myriad of things that go into a good performance. So as a first kind of first steps from post World Cup, it was I'm quite happy with how it was.
That incident you talked about there, is it too simplistic to say that maybe that's a sign of what you guys are trying to do under Mike Catton and Andy Farrell? Because you looked like your first thought was to kick the ball there, and then you thought, geez, maybe I am a little
play this. No, you don't have time to think that much, to be honest with you. So the thought process there was, obvious thing, we're deep in our 22, kick. Then the next thing is you look up and you see three lads drop into a backfield and you go, okay, that's they're covering that, so there has to be, they have to be numbers down somewhere else. So these things kind of, you don't have time to process, oh, we're under a new regime, I don't have to do that here. It doesn't work like that. So it's just a snapshot of what you see in front of you. So that's the heads up rugby that we talk about that is probably has come on, instead of just getting and banging it. All right, there's three lads back there and there's going to be space somewhere else, and there was, and then it just comes down to execution.
All right, 7 minutes past nine on this Friday morning. You are watching OTB AM, the Sports Breakfast Show from Off the Ball. Delighted to say we have a couple of Six Nations, two of the greatest ever Six Nations players joining us in studio this morning, Jeremy Guscott and Jonathan Davies. Good morning to you.
Morning.
Morning, good to be morning, here. Gents. Yeah, good to be here.
Delighted to have you.
Yeah.
Everybody good, in good shape, tip-top shape. And
well, I wouldn't say tip-top, but...
yeah. More wobbly-dobbly.
Yeah, every time I come to Dublin, they have great hospitality, so I make the most of it.
That's your standard indulge. Line, isn't it? Oh, great.
I do love it. Yeah, it's one of the best cities.
You look like you love it.
I know, I'm glad I'm on radio. I forgot I'm on Facebook as well, so... No, I love coming here, and... you know, when I was playing, yeah, then when I retired, I was lucky to do the television. So, you know, it's always a great place to come, and, you know, people
there's
are
never
brilliant.
There's never any edge.
No.
There's nothing. Really, you can right. go, I certainly as an Englishman can go to Edinburgh, and it's pretty direct. Wales is a little bit more fun. The French don't care, to be honest. No. But here there's a great respect for all sports, not just rugby.
Yeah.
But there's a great respect for what goes
and
on.
And I think it's, you know, it's a sport... you know, it is serious business, but I think it's a great spirit over here, and they see, you know, that if whoever comes here and whoever plays, you know, the best and wins, they don't take it too serious. Yeah. So it's a great place, you know, to come and play sport, to play rugby, and to watch it.
We thoroughly like we reserve the right to thoroughly despise ye when you're playing, but once the game is over, it's we can be a bit more relaxed about it.
Yeah. Oh, it's amazing, you know, like now that we retired. You know, we never missed a tackle, or we never had a bad game, did we really? So,
to be fair, in both of your cases, I think they would have been rare.
Yeah, oh, I don't know about missed tackles.
Do we still despise each other? The Warren Gatland comments, obviously, 10 years ago, that the Welsh players hate the Irish more than anyone else.
I think it's that, you know, the familiarity, because, you know, in the Pro 14, you know, they play each other so often. and they come up and they, you know, there's so many press conferences. You know, I did just think it went a bit sour, especially, you know, with Warren, with his Irish connections. Maybe there was deep-rooted kind of problems or issues or, you know, grudges. But, no, I just think, you know, the players respect each other. You don't see the players. You know, if you look at the, you know, the England game at the moment, you know, they're all talking about the brutality and the war. And, you know, I don't think there's need for it. You know, it's enough. It's physical enough on the field. So I think, no, I think that's gone now. And with Pivac coming in, I think Pivac is a happier Kiwi, if I can call him that. You know,
Is there such a thing?
Well, I'm not sure, actually. You know, they're all a bit grumpy. But I think Pivac is, he said a great statement. He's a retired policeman. And he looks at the game. I think his philosophy, he wants to play attractive rugby. Mm. But also, you know, as he said, it's a great line. He says, as a policeman, you know, when you go in to knock on someone's door to tell them that one of their family or friends have passed away through an accident or a murder or an injury. And then he says, look, you know, dropping or picking a team really isn't, there's nothing on that. So that's, I think he's a lovely guy. You know, his persona is great. You know, he tries to play with us, to get the boys to play with a smile on their face. And I'm quite excited because of the Gatlin era. I know it's like 12 or 13 years, a long, long time. And he was structured and he had success from it. From now, I think he said he's not going to, you know, change the wheel on the thing, you know, because they were successful. But he's going to add his kind of, coaching philosophy to the Welsh side, and with Stephen Jones, you know, hopefully now with the defence and, you know, the set piece going well and their attitude, that Wales will, you know, a little, I'm looking for a little bit more exciting.
Do you
to
think
watch.
The rivalry Ireland and Wales maybe stems from the Grand Slam games?
Probably.
That would get the heckles up if you're the team that's lost the first encounter that was for a big game. Because as a player, my big game was always Scotland, because that was my first big encounter in the Five Nations back then, and we lost the big one in 1990. So every year, Scotland was the game that I wanted to win the most. It wasn't the old rivalry was Wales, but you know we played club sides. Bath went over to Wales quite a lot, and there was no stigma for me going to Wales. I didn't. Wales was a Welsh clubs we were beating from the West Country, and I had no thing about the Welsh side. There was 27 years of hurt apparently between England
or Ireland at that time. Either there would have been, I mean, there might have been an intensity, but more intensity about the rivalry. But from a results point of view,
I think, you know, if you look back, you know, I think Ireland came over and tried to clinch a Grand Slam in Cardiff on a couple of occasions. So the bigger games, I agree with Gerry, the bigger games for Wales and Ireland has been those big games in the Grand Slam,
and that creates the rivalry.
It does create rivalry.
It's up there, but if you consider, since those comments were made 10 years ago, 15 games have been played between the two countries during that time. It's 8-7, something like that. Like that's probably, I'm sure.
I think also, you know, with the Irish provinces dominating the Pro 14 and actually dominating the Welsh regions. You know, I've looked at it. I've been very close to it, and well, they've actually, you know, smashed us up front, you know, in international and in you know, regional rugby. So, you know, it's been difficult for Wales to kind of step up and not be bullied at international level. And apart from last year's Grand Slam game, where I didn't know where that performance came from, you know, we totally dominate the Irish pack, which is the first time I'd seen it for a long, long time. So, you know, on the Welsh perspective, I hope that again happens on Saturday. But I don't think that we will be as dominant, and it'll be a close game.
That's very interesting, because we're talking about this idea of, can Ireland get to a pitch where what happened last year doesn't matter? Because so many Irish people are going into that game against Wales last year thinking to ourselves, well, we're back now. The loss to England is old news. We're on a roll now. We've got a couple of wins in this tournament. And then Wales just put us back right down to earth again. And obviously that form leads into the World Cup. So there's a real concern in Ireland, I think, this week, looking into this Wales game, that a repeat could happen. I'm not sure what you guys think,
why
whether or not
always,
that's possible.
Why is that always, oh, because that happened, there's a possibility it happening. Of course it can happen.
Sure.
But Ireland won the game. But people here will always go, will still go, yeah, but Scotland came back. Yeah, they came back, but they didn't win.
Yeah.
Ireland are solid. The pack is solid. You've got guys that have played well for a number of years. You've got experience. You've got the most experienced halfbacks that you could possibly have. They know each other inside out. They know how to run the team. They know the stadium. They know that even with the rain and the wind, how the conditions are going to play out. Yeah. And you've got some nice excitement there with Stockdale and Lama. I mean, the break Lama made last week was fantastic. Yeah. You need that bit of sparkle amongst the experience. And in the midfield, Ringrose goes, Henshaw comes in. It's solid.
I think we've got good balance. You've got good balance in the midfield. You've got experience in the half-backs. You've got good balance in the centres. I do like Lamore. You know, he's sort of settling in. But I hope they kind of try and put him in a bit of space, because, you know, as a rugby fan, you want to see the best players with the ball in hand, and he is, you know, is so exciting. So, and I look at it, and I didn't know where that performance came from Ireland and from Wales last year, because a total turnaround of previous encounters. But I think, you know, going back to England, when England came here and dominated him by a kicking game, I was disappointed that, you know, not only with Ireland, when they're playing international rugby, they don't seem, if they're losing, and England did a job on them the first game. They absolutely, you know, they had no space. Mm. They were, you know, physical. They out-muscled Ireland. And I thought they didn't have a plan B. And if, you know, if Wales do replicate the performance of the Grand Slam game, I hope Ireland have got a plan B to change it. As I hope, if, you know, if Wales are getting bashed up front, they'll have to have a plan B. So that's the question, is adaptability. If they're not winning and the game plan isn't going well, to think on the field, not wait for a call from the, you know, the coach to say, oh, you've got to do this, go down. It's just a half. I've got to say, right, hang on, we've got to change this. If we don't change it, you know, we're going to lose. And I think that's the case with Ireland, England, especially with, you know, with their halfbacks. Because if things don't go well with them, they say, oh, we better take Ford off and put Farrell. So that's the thing, is thinking what's in front of them and adapting to change the game when they're not winning.
It's interesting to hear you talk, because we here are obsessed with the idea that we've been chatting about it earlier on, that we're in a funk, that sort of pre-World Cup dip that we slipped into, that we're struggling to get ourselves the hell out of. England, it's very much more short-term, obviously, with last weekend in terms of what happened there. I guess moving beyond the bluster about the, you mentioned the comments a bit earlier on, we hate them, they hate us, and the General Eddie Jones outlook, let's call it. Is there a deeper problem there with England, or was it just they're missing some frontline players? When they come back in, everything is back to where it was.
They made too many errors. You cannot create momentum making errors. Yeah. You know, the way Ireland play is about possession. Mm. If they keep on dropping the ball, they've got no possession, and they lose momentum. England had 11 primary possessions in the French 22 and didn't score a try. Mm. And given how they've been scoring tries under Scott Weismantle when he was the attack coach, it's quite interesting that nothing materialised under Simon Amor, who's the new attack coach that's come in. Owen Farrell was almost non-existent. He dropped two balls, which is you rarely see. George Ford's kicking game didn't come in until the second half. The forwards as a total, as eight, And the four reserves ran a total of 52 metres. I mean, you see Stander do that on his own. They were totally ineffectual. And if you haven't got a pack making ground for you, giving you quick ball and at the same time dropping ball, where can you go? You can't score.
Mm. If England have that possession again against any other side, they'll win.
They've got to cut out their, if they cut out their errors, they're scored.
And that's where Scotland, you know, Scotland came. I thought they surprised Ireland last, because, you know, we've always said, oh, you know, the pack is a bit weak, is a soft underbelly. But last week, Scotland stepped up and I was impressed with them. But they didn't win the game because they had so many turnovers and, of course, the hog incident. Mm. You know, but they try and play an open style, but they've got to be more clinical. Whereas Wales last week against a poor Italian side, you know, they were clinical. Every opportunity they had, they scored. The issue with England for me is, I don't understand why he's picking a curry at eight. If you look at England when they play well, they have the ball, the Vinopola brothers, they carry well, Laws carries well, and then you have Tuolagi. And as we did something last night with Keith Wood, and you were saying, you know, Jonathan Joseph is coming on a crash ball. Yeah, well, he's not there to come on a crash ball. Mm. So at the moment, I'm not sure what they're trying to do.
Steve and Diamond even has some pretty interesting things to say about it during the week.
Yeah,
about
he wasn't happy with the number eight, you know. So
I would bring Don Brunt in.
When you've got them.
And Hughes, Nathan Hughes from Bristol, and say, OK, you might not be the fittest right now, but they're the two best attacking number eights in the Premiership. So
get Curry back on the flank.
Particularly against Scotland, where that's where England lost two years ago.
I don't get it. Why is he trying to pick you know, someone like Curry, it was a great player.
It's not the English game either.
No, but when you've, if you didn't have a number eight, I'll totally understand it. Yeah, okay, let's chuck Curry in. Mm. But when you've got those players that Jerry have mentioned, I just don't understand why you go without the specialist eight. Where it's the main ball carrier, you know.
Weirdly,
from
again, but statistically again, which is just like this.
He's a changed man. He's a changed man. Unbelievable.
But England have lost more when Billy plays number eight.
Have they really?
Yeah.
Right.
So statistically, right, it's not. It's a benefit. Yeah. Weirdly,
they're probably huge games, though, are they? When he's playing and against better opposition, perhaps.
I haven't drilled down enough.
I tell you, the thing is with England, you know, I think that, you know, I want to don't understand. I do like Eddie Jones and the way he is and everything. But you know, the two comments he said is one: it was my fault. I coached him badly to win in the World Cup final, which okay is a bit of an odd statement. And then the last week against France, I coached badly again, and it was my fault. Now whether he tries to take the pressure off his players by saying that, I just don't get it. So if they lose in Scotland, and the pressure's on him, you know, once again. Yeah. Would they play then? Would they play after
Ireland?
Ireland. Yeah. So, you know, in Twickenham, Ireland going there, if Ireland win, I think he's under a bit of pressure if they lose on the weekend.
What's the greatest team I'm going to make the greatest team that have ever played the game. I mean, again, we go back into that general outlook position. What's your state of the nation, let's call it, on Eddie Jones specifically?
We haven't got as much strength in depth of quality players that the rest of the rugby world seems to think.
More than Wales and Ireland and Scotland, though.
Quality? Well, if you look at England at the moment, so before this game at the weekend, there was Billy Vonopolo and Mako Vonopolo, right? Watson and Manu Tuilagi injured. We're not the same. England are not the same team without those four players. Mm-hmm. How can four players make such a huge difference? And that tells me the strength in depth, quality strength in depth. We've got the numbers, but we haven't got the quality. I was so disappointed. I normally lose my head when England go out and play like that because making so many errors is unforgivable for a professional athlete. It's like watching cricket. If their technique's wrong, why is it wrong? You got all day and all night to practice that. So it was, for me, it was a mental aberration. The Sinclair knocking the ball on. Charlie Yule's knocking the ball on. Owen Farrell knocking the ball on. It was like they had a plague of knock-ons. And it rarely happens for that
long may continue, though, obviously.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm saying, again, you know, you said, we're going to be physical and brutal and we're going to, you know, with Sean Edwards there, you knew that they were going to come in and the noise, you know, in that stadium. It's a new era, new players, new coach. World Cup is there, in 4 years' time. They were up for it. So any big hit would just erupt, you know, the crowd.
They didn't take the heat out of it, did they?
So they just said, right, let's turn them. Take the pressure. They'd be like, you know, chomping at the bit to get that England. So just keep off them. Just go, I'll tell you what, we'll deflate them all. Just turn them, keep it quiet, play in their own 22. And they didn't. And I think, you know, it was extraordinary. And when Eddie puts the pressure on them again, he tries to take it off them, but then goes, oh, yeah, we're going to be the best side in the world. You've got to earn that. I know if he says it indoors, that's fair enough. Mm. But I just think at the moment,
it's a strange one.
He's putting pressure on his players when he's trying to take the pressure off them. So it's odd.
We got your match prediction earlier in the week, so I won't go for that. But in one word each, who's going to win the Six Nations?
France for me.
Ireland.
I think it's, if you look at it, it all comes down to who's playing where. And I think France have got Ireland and England over there.
Mm-hmm.
But England have got Wales and Ireland at home. So, you know, if England win this week, they're back, you know, they're back in prime position. So home advantage is huge in the Six Nations. So. Yeah. But France, you know, who knows? No?
Ireland will take that.
I can't believe you're all so pessimistic.
I know,
you're so miserable. You know, all so miserable.
Normally rely on the Welsh for that.
You're all coming over. I'm going home. I'm missing the mad taffs in the air.
Oh, are you? I was going to ask if you have a nice quiet day planned.
Unfortunately, I've got, you know, we got to go. Jerry's going to Scotland. He's going back for breakfast. I'm going back to Cardiff because ITV have got it. So, you know, I was supposed to do Radio 5. But unfortunately, there's no flights out to Paris on Saturday night. So, and I didn't want to catch the 6 o'clock Sunday, no chance.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I've done it before, I've gone straight to it from Reynards to the airport from Reynards. So, I'm getting too old for that now.
We're getting to learn a lot about you, John, from the Joe Jackson morning. Lads, pleasure chatting to you. Enjoy
you.
The rugby of the weekend. Thanks for coming in.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio. That was an Off the Ball Podcast Network presentation.